My favorite part of that intro clip is the gorilla slap fighting. That's just awesome, awesome. I want to welcome all of you here in Chula Vista. Welcome all of our churches. We in Southern California and in TJ, and now in Salt Lake City, and our newest church. Welcome to Venice, not Italy. California, that's right. When you were growing up, you might have heard a phrase. The phrase goes something like this: you can be whatever you want. You can be whatever you want. And so, six-year-old kid hears that, and he begins to dream about the day that he will be playing in a World Cup. Or the eight-year-old girl who is now convinced, I'm going to be a neurosurgeon. Well, the problem is that six-year-old boy over the years, he doesn't learn World Cup discipline. And, you know, he's not going to get his break. Well, and it's confusing to him because every year he got a trophy, regardless of how he performed. And the little girl, neurosurgeon, she doesn't like to study. And so she's hoping she can be a neurosurgeon and operate on you one day. And hoping also there'll be no tests. You see, I have some bad news for you. You can't be whatever you want. Have a great week. No, it's kind of this idea of wishing, wanting, or willing when it comes to being able to accomplish. You see, I used to wish I could play guitar. I even wanted to enough to buy one. I was unwilling to practice. And as a result, you do not want me to inflict upon you my lack of skill in that area, wishing, wanting, or willing. This idea of success is similar. You think about successful people, and certain words tend to come to mind, words like passion, focus, driven, achievement. These are the words that tend to come to mind. The desire to succeed, to achieve, to have influence, to make a difference. Those are good, God-given desires. Nothing wrong with those at all. But that drive towards success can be distorted. It can take us off track if that hunger for achievement and excess really becomes sort of excessive. There's a shadow side to it. And we can be consumed by success when we take it to an extreme. We can be so laser-focused that we're completely insensitive to the people around us. We can't see anything except our goal. We can get so busy that we miss what's really important in life, like friends and family and faith, and we don't even see them anymore. And the destination that we end up is lonely, and it's also stressful. I mean, you don't sleep, you can't seem to shut this thing down. So this destructive side of these healthy desires and passions that God gives us can become a problem. And if we're not careful, we can get off course. And this desire can begin to eat us from the inside out. This treadmill of endless achievement seeking can actually be destructive to our lives. Now, during this series, we're looking at this diary, this journal of a guy named Solomon. Solomon was the king following his father, David, and his journal is in the book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, which is sort of the back half of the Bible, if you're new to this. And this idea of Solomon being someone we would want to consider his words. You see, he was the wisest man who ever lived. He was also, at his time, the wealthiest man who ever lived. In his day, he was a Forbes magazine cover boy material, no doubt about it. If Dos Equis were around then, he would be the most interesting man in the world. In the eyes of the world around him, he was at the top of his game. When other kings would come to meet with, to learn from, listen to Solomon, they would just bow down because he had it all. He was what they wanted to be. And Solomon, in this book, would tell them and us, no, you don't. You don't want to end up in the destination I ended up in. You don't want to have this kind of a destructive life. We saw last week that Solomon's pursuit of pleasure was destructive. He was hoping to achieve kind of a peace, a satisfaction, a fulfillment through pleasure. And we use this little illustration of trying to fit the square peg in the round hole. You see, fulfillment cannot be had through pleasure, and it won't fit no matter how hard you try. And also, it cannot be fulfilled. This goal cannot be accomplished through achievement, through success. We really cannot pull it off. It won't happen. We were also introduced to a Hebrew word, hebel. It's on your outline. If you're online, you can click the little notes button there and see this. It was translated meaningless, but the broader translation is emptiness, futility, a vapor that vanishes quickly and leaves nothing behind, kind of like home values in 08. Sorry, that was painful for some of us, so I'll move on. So it's like chasing the wind. Solomon gets sideways, gets off track on this whole idea of achievement and success. Let's pick it up where we left off last week in Ecclesiastes 2, verse 17. So I came to hate life because of everything done here under the sun is so troubling. Everything is meaningless, like chasing the wind. I came to hate all my hard work here on earth, for I must leave to others everything I've earned. And who can tell whether my successors will be wise or foolish? Yet they will control everything I have gained by my skill and hard work under the sun. How meaningless. So I gave up in despair, questioning the value of my hard work in this world. Some people work wisely with knowledge and skill, then must leave the fruit of their efforts to someone who hasn't worked for it. This too is hebel, meaningless, a great tragedy. We can and should pour some of our best energy into our work. But if we are looking for accomplishment, achievement, success to fulfill us, if we're looking for titles and trophies, for acclaim and applause, approval as the source of our happiness, hebel. It's meaningless. It's a square peg in a round hole. It cannot fulfill it. It won't accomplish it. It's chasing the wind. And this hunger for success, if it goes unchecked, it becomes a slow fade for those of you who are Jesus followers. Because we start off following, and then we don't even realize that we're getting off track. And we have this slow fade, this pulling away. And before we know it, we go, how did I get here? How did I end up in this place? And I've seen this played out in many lives, and I've also seen it played out in my own life. If you're taking notes, jot this down. We're chasing the wind when performance defines us. When performance becomes our identity, it's a red flag. It's a dangerous place to be. And that's exactly what Solomon did. And one of the ways I've seen this played out is when I've had friends who retire, whether they've been in a career for many, many years, or perhaps for someone who has retired from military service after 20, 30, 40 years. And the question is, who am I now? My identity was so wrapped up in what I did and what I had achieved, and now I just feel kind of lost. And this performance-driven identity, it starts at a really young age. Parents, some even well-meaning parents, begin to attach this idea of acceptance and approval with a kid's performance. And even though they don't mean to necessarily do that, but to the kid at times, love seems based on their parents' approval. And they're always asking, did I do good? And then there are parents who know exactly what they're doing, and they crank up this expectation level, and they definitely tie their love and acceptance and approval to the performance in that sport or in school or whatever it might be. And they're often perpetuating an unhealthy cycle that they grew up in themselves. And parents can tend to try and live vicariously through their kids. I mean, I sucked at that, but you're going to succeed. You know, I didn't make it, but I'm going to be successful when you're successful at this. I mean, there's shows on TV that, I mean, just depict this so clearly. Have you seen Toddlers and Tiaras? Hopefully it's not your favorite show. But, you know, there's got to be at least one or two moms in the background there that they wanted the crown so my four-year-old will get it for me. Yee. Or maybe swamp people. You know. Boy, jump in there and wrestle that gator. Make daddy proud. Or you can listen to conversation, like if you're at a playground, listen to conversation between parents or even funnier, grandparents. And the kinds of things that they say to each other. Oh, when did she start walking? Well, 2 months. Okay. Well, you know what? At 5 months, my daughter was able to do her ABCs. Well, that's great. Yeah. At 6 months, mine was reading Dr. Seuss. Oh, really? Mine too, the biography, right? You know, it just sort of spins out of control. This whole thing just gets crazy because we're wanting to push and push to perfection. A few years back, Alanis Morissette wrote a song called Perfect. Let me read a few of the lines. I'll live through you. I'll make you what I never was. If you're the best, then maybe so am I. Compared to him, compared to her, I'm doing this for your own good. You'll make up for what I blew. What's the problem? Why are you crying? Be a good girl. Push a little further now. That wasn't fast enough to make us happy. We'll love you just the way you are, if you're perfect. I'm hoping she didn't dedicate the song to her parents, but I really don't know. The love need in every kid is just so strong that if I have to perform, if I have to produce to get approval, then that's what I'm going to do. Because I so need this from you. And then that little boy grows into a man, the little girl grows into a woman, and they're still chasing, still producing, still achieving, because they're longing to hear the words as adults that they didn't hear as kids. You're loved. You're important. You're accepted. And then starve for this unconditional love. As adults, we just do whatever it takes. And if it takes long hours, 7 days a week, then I'll do it. And if it costs me my health and my relationships and my soul, then I'll pay it. I'm going to perform and produce and impress, and I'm going to win because I'm going for this image, this goal. It's like last week we talked about that fill in the blank. You know, when this happens, then I'll be happy. I'll be fulfilled. And we do the same thing with this issue of success. When I reach management, then I can take a breath. When I'm number one in my class, then my parents will finally approve. When I make a boatload of money, then I'll be successful. And we keep pushing for that next level because then finally I'll be loved. Success might be that square peg in the round hole for you. Are you trying to fill that hole in your heart with achievement and success? Because it cannot fulfill. It cannot accomplish what you're pushing for. Solomon says it's hebel. It's meaningless. It's chasing the wind. Then there's this progression that happens from moving from this idea of my accomplishment, my performance is going to define me. And it's this, we're chasing the wind when we fall into the comparison trap. We say things, well, I may be smart, but I'm not as smart as him or her. I might be skinny, but not as skinny as she is. You know, I might be successful, but not as successful as him. We fall into this comparison trap, and it just produces so much image management. Because you're always falling short of someone you're comparison yourself to. You're comparing yourself to because, so then what do? You have to look as though you made it. And so there's this constant image management. And if you want to see image management in all of its glory, just go to your 10, 20, 30-year class reunion. I mean, there are people who will rent a suit, rent a car, and rent a date to try and impress and manage their image to impress a bunch of people they have absolutely no contact with anymore. I love the story about the woman who was going to her 50th class reunion. And like all of us, you know, at times when we see someone our own age, we think we look so much younger. That's kind of where she was at. She goes and there's the ballroom and she looks in and she sees all these old people. And she's thinking, well, this can't be my class. She sees an old guy sitting by the door and she says, is this the class of 52? He said, yes, ma'am, it is. She says, I guess this is my class. He said, oh, yeah, what did you teach? Or the doctor who runs into his 92-year-old patient in the grocery store, sees him from a distance, and he can't help but notice that he is with a very attractive, much, much younger woman. And he's just sort of watching from a distance, and this old guy sees him. He says, hey, doc, I just want to thank you for the great advice. And the doctor's going, what advice? So you said to get a hot mama and be cheerful. He said, no. I said, you got a heart murmur. Be careful. All of this kind of goofy image management that we do. But it can take even a darker turn because that comparison trap often leads us to a secondary trap of envy. And now I not only want something, but I want to make sure you don't have it. And it just begins to eat us up and consume us, and we get obsessed with this idea of competing and winning. Ecclesiastes 4:4. Then I observed that most people are motivated to success by their envy, by envy of their neighbors. But this too is meaningless. It's like chasing the wind. And when envy starts to drive us, we start living in a place Pastor Andy Stanley calls the land of Ur, where it's not enough to be rich. I want to be richer. I want to be smarter. I want to be prettier. And then over time, we want to move up into a better neighborhood called Est. And then I want to be rich Est, and pretty Est, and smart Est, and retweeted Est. And then we get the win. But Solomon says there's no win in this comparison. It's chasing the wind. Ur and Est are moving targets because there's always going to be someone who's more Ur, and you'll never be the Est. Envy is just so exhausting. It takes a whole lot of mental horsepower to maintain that. Ecclesiastes 2:22. So what do people get in this life for all their hard work and anxiety? Their days of labor are filled with pain and grief. Even at night, their minds cannot rest. It's all meaningless. When your quest for achievement and success consumes you, your stress levels just go through the roof. And you just, you know, you can't sleep. You're just popping Tums. And you're sick all the time. And you're irritable and cranky. No one wants to be around. This hunger that's fueled by comparison, it's a dead-end street. And the address is a very lonely one. Because contrary to what you might believe, people don't want to be around someone who is obsessed with their own success. We tend to avoid those people. Author Jim Collins said, stop trying to be interesting and start being interested. Be other-focused instead of self-consumed. So Solomon says, chasing the wind when performance defines us, and it's chasing the wind when we fall into that comparison trap. And then eventually, three, we're chasing the wind when we will do whatever it takes to win. And whatever it takes comes at the expense of our character. If I have to cheat or mislead or power up or manipulate, well, that's what I'll do. Because, hey, you know, that's just the economy of the world we live in, right? It's what it takes. Well, maybe, but that's not God's economy. In God's economy, success is an inside-out thing. And being consumed by chasing this image, we end up, well, we'll do whatever it takes. We'll do whatever it takes. And what God wants, I don't really give it a second thought because it might get in the way. Why? Because we're worshiping. And we have full devotion and affection. And it's all that is spent on bowing down to this image. this thing that we're chasing. The Bible word for that is idolatry. We become a worshiper of this image, and we're going to chase after it no matter what it costs. And what's ironic about that is then we expect God to help us achieve this image, this idol that we are bowing down to. We want God to help us accomplish our idolatry. So what does this mean? Does this mean that, you know, we're just resigned to some sort of mediocre, non-passionate, non-ambitious lives? No, quite the opposite. Because when we begin to get our priorities right, when we begin to make this shift and begin to see through God's eyes how He views us, then we can begin to grow. And then we can begin to actually live and love like never before. And success actually becomes a byproduct of a God-centered life. We end up with all of it. It fits. But if we go after some other thing, specifically achievement or pleasure, success, it'll never accomplish it. Patrick Morley said, failure is to succeed at something that doesn't really matter. So if life consists of a fat portfolio and 1,000 lost golf balls, then we miss the point. I want to succeed at something that matters, and I believe you do too. But if we're going to, we will need to be willing to get honest about where we're at. What is it that's caused me to do what I do? What is it that's really driving me? I had to face some of this as a young father and husband. I had to deal with my own workaholism, my own drivenness, and I had to be honest and say that there were a whole lot of insecurities in me that were driving it. Insecurities from being raised in a poor home. Insecurities from some of the learning disabilities that I faced growing up. Feeling less than for so long. I was not going to be left there. And I pushed and pushed. And it sort of dawned on me what I was doing when my wife either wanted to leave or kill me. It just be kind of, the light went on a little bit. And she hadn't decided which she was going to do. And so I needed to begin to address this. But I was involved in a church that was growing. I was part of the pastoral team. It was moving and grooving, and we were going for it, just pushing and constantly working, not taking time off because, hey, baby, it's a whole lot better to burn out than rust out. We said stupid things like that. And I'd like to be able to tell you that when my wife Carmen and I sat down and talked, it was just one of the things that we were facing, and she let me know that my drivenness was driving her away. I'd love to be able to tell you that I just changed that day. I just took those issues on. But the truth is that Carmen had issues too, and I felt it would be best if we addressed those first. You see, at the core of what was going on with me was believing that God loved me and accepted me. That before I did anything that day, He loved me and accepted me. And you, and it might seem silly for some of you to go, well, why would you find that hard? I don't know. Probably all kinds of weird family, jacked up stuff. I don't know. Growing up, I don't know. Doesn't really matter why. But it was truth. And I would love to be able to tell you, and I faced all that, and it took a couple of weeks, and now I stand before you perfected. But I don't think you'd buy it any more than if I told you I spend all my time bodybuilding. You're not buying it. Success is an inside out kind of thing. That's how it happens. And what we chase after, what we are pursuing, we have to begin by saying, that's a choice we make. That's a choice. And so we need to choose differently. And I want to suggest that you might need to choose, first of all, what you believe about God and how he feels about you. Choose to believe that he loves you. Choose to believe that you're accepted. Because then you can grow. Choose to realign what's first, what's most important in your life. Or you're going to end up chasing something that can never deliver. You'll constantly be trying to fit that square peg in the round hole to fill that hole in your heart. So where do you begin? The Apostle Paul gave us at least a list to begin to think about it in Galatians chapter 5. But the Holy Spirit produces this kind of fruit in our lives: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. There's no law against these things. And you know, that's a pretty good list, because what if you had all those going on in your life? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. If you had all those going on, you'd go, I'm fulfilled. This is it. But we might have to realign some things that are getting in the way of that. I pray that these words will maybe just cause you to think, to reconsider, and then hopefully even to make some choices for change. Watch this.
I choose love. No occasion justifies hatred. No injustice warrants bitterness. I choose love. Today, I will love God and what God does.
I choose joy. I will invite my God to be the God of circumstance. I will refuse the temptation to be cynical, the tool of the lazy thinking. I will refuse to see people as anything less than human beings created by God. I will refuse to see any problem as anything less than an opportunity to see God.
I choose peace. I will live forgiven. I will forgive so that I may live.
I choose patience. I will overlook the inconveniences of the world rather than complain that the wait is too long. I will thank God for a moment to pray instead of clenching my fists at new assignments. I will face them with joy and courage.
I choose kindness. I will be kind to the poor, for they are alone, kind to the rich, for they are afraid, and kind to the unkind, for such is how God has treated me.
I choose goodness. I will go without a dollar before I take a dishonest one. I will be overlooked before I will boast. I will confess before I will accuse. I choose goodness.
I choose faithfulness. Today I will keep my promises. My debtors will not regret their trust. My associates will not question my word. My wife will not question my love. And my children will never fear that their father will not come home.
I choose gentleness. Nothing is won by force. I choose to be gentle. If I raise my voice, may it be only in praise. If I clench my fist, may it be only in prayer. If I make a demand, may it be only of myself.
I choose self-control. I'm a spiritual being. After this body is dead, my spirit lives on. I refuse to let what will not rule, the eternal. I choose self-control. I will be drunk only by joy. I will be impassioned only by my fate. I will be influenced only by God. I will be taught only by Christ. I choose self-control.
Love.
Joy.
Peace.
Patience.
Kindness.
Goodness.
Faithfulness.
Gentleness. Self-control.
To these I commit my day. If I succeed, I will give thanks. If I fail, I will seek his grace. And then when this day is done, I will place my head on my pillow and rest.